I mean, a lot of Perek Vav is going to discuss the details of the size of the Beis HaMikdash, so we'll, you know, go through those details pretty quickly. But overall, the, you know, this is sort of Shlomo's crowning achievement, right? So he said, "Vayhi b'shmonim shana, v'arba me'ot shana, l'tei ben Yisrael me'eretz Yitzrayim, b'shana ha'revi'it, b'chodesh ziv, u'chodesh ha'sheni, hamloch Shlomo Yisrael, v'yiven ha'bayit l'adonai." So already it starts off interestingly, the Navi says that Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash in the 480th year from when they left Mitzrayim, which is, you know, sort of a striking thing. You don't get any other point where the Torah just says, well, it's been this many years since Yitzias Mitzrayim, but as the Mefarshim know, the reason seems to be that the Beis HaMikdash is the culmination of the process that began at Yitzhak Mitzrayim. The Rashi and the Ramban have a machloket whether the Mishkan was always part of the plan, or the Mishkan was only part of the plan because the Jews sinned in the Chela Egel. But the notion that there would one day be a Mikdash seems to, according to everybody, have been lechatchila, because even before, right after Kabbalah Satorah and Parshas Mishpatim, even before the Jews sin, there's descriptions of Alila Regel, of us going to the Mikdash. So Mikdash seems to have been part of the original goal, and the Ramban develops at length that the Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan are meant to create a constant reliving of Har Sinai. He goes through a lot of proofs for that.
Midot were not given in, like, the measurements of the...
Correct, but the basics, right? You know, he points out that, like, at Har Sinai, you have three levels of separation from the outside till you get to God. Right? You had the people, and then you had the Kohanim, the leaders, and then you had where Moshe got into, and the Beis HaMikdash, you have that, you know, the Azara, and then you have the Kodesh, where the Kohanim can go in, and then you have Kodesh Kadashim, where, when God actually appeared at Har Sinai, you have... The God appears ba'anan, he appears in the cloud, and when the Kohen Gadol actually enters the Kodesh HaKadashim on Yom Kippur to actually be with God, he has to go be ki ba'anan e'ra'el ha'kaporet, he has to create the cloud of Ktoret, which seems to reminisce on that. So the Ramban notes that the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan in general, are supposed to carry on the legacy of Har Sinai. So leaving Mitzrayim was the beginning of this long, long, long process, which, as the Navi says, took 480 years, but now we've reached it, right? We've finally got the Torah, built a nation, gotten to the point where we have a functioning government, a king, we're at peace, and we can build the Beis HaMikdash, and that is supposed to be the climax. So the Navi sort of summarizes Jewish history, that we've gotten here, 480 years. B'chodesh Ziv, so Chodesh Ziv, as he said, is Chodesh HaSheni, is Iyar, which is weird because in general, in Tanakh, there are three ways that the months are called. In Chumash, months are all by numbers, right? Months only have numbers. They don't have any names. And that's by design because you're supposed to, the months are supposed to commemorate Yitzhak Mitzrayim. So we always count from Nisan. Once we come up from Bavel, we change that and we give them names, and that's what we have now. But the only time you get these names are here. Right? Shlomo has his own names for the months that never appear before and never appear after. It's not really clear what's going on. So some of the academic scholars think that this is a negative perspective on Shlomo and assume that this is... These names are from Tyre, meaning from Hiram, that this is part of his treaty with Hiram, is he's giving in to their culture and he's using their months. Alternatively, it could be somewhat positive, or it could be the way the Ramban explains the reason we start calling the months by their names when we leave Bavel is as part of a commemoration of the Nisim of leaving Bavel, right? The numbers of the month commemorate the Yitzhak Mitzrayim. The months, the fact that we have Babylonian months, but then we came back to Israel after Galus Bavel, reminds us that we eventually left that. So we have a recognition. So it's the mark of a new era. So it could be that Shlomo is coming up with names for the months to give it sort of a mark of, of a new era or something like that. But whatever it is, he names it and he builds this house for God.
That's about 3,000 years. This story takes place about 3,000 years ago.
When does it start? How many?
That's, if it's 400 years after.
They say 970 years before the Sefira, now we have the year 2000, yeah. So it's about 3,000 years.
That makes sense. Yeah.
But from what point do we see those months named? From now on?
No, this, before? No, like this month, like Ziv, is just here, just Shlomo. Like later on we get, right, Ziv is ER.
Is it maybe he wants to commemorate that he started to pay?
Right, maybe he doesn't. It's, yeah, and it's not really clear what it would mean. Like Ziv might mean, like it means in Aramaic, it might mean like light, mm-hmm. sort of, who knows. It's not really clear what it means. But yeah, so it's not totally clear. Again, so some of the academic scholars think that this is part of like his acculturation to Hiram. Not really clear what it is. V'abayda shabana melech shlomo l'adonai shishim amar ko v'esrim rachbo shloshim amar kamaso. So it's 60 by 20 by 30,
which is
between a foot and a half and 2 feet. You know, it's
shishim amar is maybe 40 meters.
Meters. Right. You know, it's not impossibly big. Now, there is a slight problem. Well, more than a slight problem, but in Divrei Hayamim, the measurements are different than we get here. It's not so. The Mefarshim all try to figure it out. They might be referring to different parts because you can measure it from the structure itself. But then there's the courtyards. What is he measuring? Well, it's bigger, but again, you have the courtyard, and then you have the structure inside of it. So the base, there's the outer walls, and then the azara, and then there's the kodesh and kodesh kadashim. So how much are you talking? But the measurements are significantly different. Right, if he should have a long discussion here. I think it's double. I think some of them are double. I think it's like 120. Right, 120. Yeah, it is the comparison chart.
No, it just is. Maybe it's.
Right. So in Divrei Hayamim, the measurements are, I think, double what they are here. So again, the Mefarshim really try to figure out like how exactly you get to, you know, which what does it mean? How do you reconcile them? And then ulam al pnei ha'ichal abayit eser ma'amar ha'ko al pnei rochav ha'bayit eser ba'amar rachbo al pnei ha'bayit. So then you have the portico in front, so that's 20 long by 10. Vayas abayit chalonei shkufim atumim, and he makes these windows, which simple shot sounds like these might be the first windows really ever, right? Shkufim atumim, like that they actually have glass on it. They're sealed off because windows classically were just holes in the wall. It sounds so. One way of reading this is that it was a window which you could see through, but it was solid, right? So it was, you know, it was
sealed
glass
windows.
What?
Sealed, the tomb is
right,
sealed.
Right, so it might have been, so that's why some understand this as the first glass windows, right, that it was sealed, but still see-through. The Midrashim build on this, that maybe these windows were meant to, you know, they were small on the inside and big on the outside, so that they would, you know, so that they would sort of symbolically or physically enlighten the world. Vayiven al kir abayit yatsiya saviv et kir abayit saviv leichal dvir vayas lot saviv. He makes the walls. He makes the enclosing the kodesh, and he builds a storage structure around that. Hayatsiya tachtona chamesh b'amarach ba v'tichona shesh b'amarach ba v'shlishet sheva b'amarach ba ki migraot natan labayit saviv chutzel loti achos b'kirot habayit. Right, the lowest story was 5, and the middle one was 6, and the top one, and the third was 7. Because there were recesses around it so that no one could get in. When he built it, without any axe, without any iron tools. So this is a fascinating move by Shlomo. The Torah says that you can't use metal for the Mizbeach. Mm-hmm. And Shlomo expands that. and says that he was going to one up it, so to speak, and he was going to make it that the whole Beis HaMikdash is made without metal, right? And the reason not is because metal represents death; it represents war. So the Mizbeach specifically wasn't supposed to have it because that's the place where we bring karbanot, and that's supposed to bring the peace between us and God. But Shlomo went out of his way to say no; he was going to do this for the for all of the Beis HaMikdash. And this is where Chazal come up with this, with the Shamir, exactly, right? That's where the discussion, they have Machlokas, one of the possibilities being the Shamir, of how exactly he did this. But Shlomo is clearly expanding on that notion. This is something that's in general true of Shlomo, meaning whether you, however you understand the measurements based on this versus Divrei HaYamim, what's clear is that the measurements are significantly larger than the Mishkan. And he's taking the Mishkan, he's building on it. So you have that, you know, in the, you know, he's building on it in terms of size, but also spiritually, right? Instead of just sufficing with the with the Mizbeach being perfect, the whole Beis HaMikdash has to be perfect, has to be without metal.
But he didn't have the kelim from the Mishkan, or did he have it?
He adds to it. In Divrei HaYamim, it goes through the extent to which he adds to it.
The Mizbeach was the Mizbeach from the Mishkan, did
I don't think so, right? He builds it, I think so.
So where is the stuff from the Mishkan?
Does he? So he builds actually 10 menorot. Then Divrei HaYamim, he builds 10 menorot. He multiplies the menorot. And he multiplies everything. He has 10 kiors, so he may have had the original, but he adds and adds and adds, and he multiplies everything. The simple reason, the simple pshat is that he adds 10 menorot because it's a big place, right? It's a bigger place. You know, you have one little lamp. It won't do a thing in a big building, right? You know, you have more lights in this room. But the Midrashim go on how he has all these, you know, for all symbolic reasons why he has it. But he adds beyond the requirements in terms of numbers, in terms of quality. Petach Hatzelah Tichonah. Petach Hatzelah Tichonah L'Katef Habayit Ha'imanit V'ulim Ya'alu El Tichonah Min HaTichonah L'Shlishim V'Yivin Habayit V'Chalei V'Yisman Habayit Gevim V'Shtirot Barazim V'Yivin Ha'yatzi Al Kol Habayit Chamesh Amot Komata V'Yachoz Habayit V'Atzei Arazim. So the entrance, the middle story of the side chamber was on the right side of the house, and the winding stairs led to the middle chambers, and the middle chambers to the third story. When he finished building the house, he paneled the house with beams and planks of cedar. He built the story structure against the entire house, each story 5 cubits high, so that encased the house with timbers of cedar. Now, one of the...
There were three stories.
Yeah, three stories. And, it's an impressive building. It's not gargantuan, but it's an impressive size building. No, it's not huge. It's the actual structure of it is not huge, big. Now one of the questions that's you know very important to understanding Shlomo is, if you skip for a moment to just the beginning of Perek Zayin, in Perek Zayin, Shlomo says that Beito bana Shlomo shloshes reishana vayichal kol Beito. So it Shlomo built his own house, his palace. It took 13 years. And he finished the whole house. So this is something that the Mefarshim will pick up on, is that the Beis HaMikdash was finished in the fourth year, right? B'Shana HaRevi, right? B'Shana. Sorry, the second year of Shlomo, right? He begins to build it. And you know, his house, he's only building at year 13. So Rashi, well, he finishes, right? He finishes. Fourth year. It's in his fourth year he works on the Beis HaMikdash. Second month, fourth year. As opposed to his house, which he really finishes in the 13th year. So the Rashi, following the Midrash, he finishes it in, if you look in Pasuk, right before that, in Pasuk Lamed Zayin, he says, "B'shana Raviit Yusad Beit Adonai Beirach Ziv." So in the fourth year, he started. "V'shana Achadas Raviirach Bul Hu Chodesh Shvi'i Kala Bayit L'Chol Dvarav Chomish Ba'Veinu Sheva Shanim." It takes 7 years, right, from your 40-year 11, then he finishes his palace in year 13.
So he built at the same time.
So So Rashi and the Midrash and many of the Mefarshim take this as high praise of Shlomo, that he gets the Beis HaMikdash, you know, is his first priority, and then he makes sure that's done, and then his palace, either it's he starts afterwards, or at least he finishes afterwards, meaning it's not as high a priority as the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, they sing the praises of Shlomo, that he's working on this, on the Beis HaMikdash, that's his first priority, and not his his personal palace. On the other hand, another way of reading it, and this is what Alex Israel points out in his article, is, you know, it's a bit ambiguous. It could be positive, but it could also be negative, because... Well, no, not in that sense, right? Meaning, you know, that could... Not as much... I mean, it could be that he spends more time on it, but it's not clear when he started, so we don't know. But the bigger problem is... Or not problem, is the framing issue, which is Perek Zion starts with the building of his palace, but then picks up again with the Beit HaMikdash just a little bit later. Like, he's not done. The discussion of the Beit HaMikdash is not quite done. Right, Perek Chet is still talking about the Beit HaMikdash. So the building of his palace is thrown in the middle. So again, the way Rashi takes it is the Psukim want to just remind you that, by the way, Shlomo did all of this before he finished his own palace, and that's a really good thing. On the other hand, the fact that they're interwoven may imply that at some level, yes, he's building the Beis HaMikdash for God. But the other hand, at some level, and this is something we assume in Shlomo, it may be that he's building the Beis HaMikdash, or at least partially, as part of his royal building projects, as, you know, a sign of pride. You know, the Beis HaMikdash isn't just for God, it's also just like he builds his palace, he builds the Beis HaMikdash, and they're, you know, both part of his plan for his own aggrandizement as king. Primarily, it seems good. Right? Primarily, the Psukim really do seem to think that it's good, but there's a question to what extent that's also mixed in. The fact that they're both part of his project simultaneously, is there an element of negativity? It's not clear. But again, Rashi and many of the Mefarshim take this as a based on the Midrash, as a very serious positive for him. Now, smack in the middle of the building, like the building process, Pasuk Gid Aleph has God speak to Shlomo. Vahi dvar Adonai Shlomo lemor, habayit azer shatavoneim, teilech b'chukotai v'mishpatai ta'aseh v'shamartat kol mitzvotai, lelechet bohem v'kimoti et dvari itach, asher dibarti el David avicha v'shachandi v'doch b'nei Yisrael v'lo azov et ami Yisrael. If you keep the mitzvot, then I will fulfill the promise that I gave to David, and I will, you know, the Beit HaMikdash will survive, and I'll be amongst the Jewish people, I'll never forsake you. So this is, you know, like Hashem, right in the middle of the process, reminds him that the Beis HaMikdash isn't magic, right? If you don't just build it and now I'm going to protect it because it represents me, like, it is contingent. And V'shachanti b'toch b'nei Yisrael is borrowed from Parshat Truma when we first built the Mishkan, and he said, build the, right, Vasuli Mikdash v'shachanti b'tocham. So this is when it happens, the actual Mikdash, not the Mishkan. But Hashem says it's dependent on your actions. This is not automatic. The Malbim has something which I liked here, which is, you know, it's sort of a weird place for this to come, because it's smack in the middle, right? Because Pasuk Yudalid picks up again. Even Shlomo Rabbeid v'chaleyu, he builds the house and he finishes. Even Akiro Rabbeid mibaita, bitzelet arazim, mikarka abayit, akiro asipun, tzipa eit mibayit, vetzavet karka abayit, bitzelet birushim. He panels the walls with cedar and he puts wood on it and he makes a floor with cypress, he makes a hardwood floor. So the Malbim says, well, why is Hashem talking here? Like, this is just... Either say it at the beginning, I'd say, like, you know, you're about to build the Beit HaMikdash, but it's dependent on you doing mitzvah, or do it at the end, right? It's like smack in the middle of the conversation, or the, of the building, Hashem interrupts and says, it's, you know, just remember you have to keep the mitzvah. So the Malbim has a nice thing, which may be drash, but I think it's nice. And he says, well, if you look at it, it's smack in between building the outside and the inside. Right? After he's built the outside, before he's put anything on the inside, Hashem says, keep the mitzvot. As if to say, you know, the structure is very nice, but what's inside of it has to be fundamentally commitment to me, right? Before you, you know, it's very nice to have this outside structure, but before you start getting inside, right, the inner core of the Mikdash is not the hardwood floors, right? It's your commitment to me. So right now, as right before Shlomo, right, he's finished the outer structure, but he hasn't yet started building the inside. Now is when Hashem interrupts and says, remember what this is all about. Which I think is a nice sort of, mm-hmm. you know, way of framing it. And the next pasuk, again, without getting into all the details, what you do see is this notion of permanence, right? The Mishkan was movable, so it had no floor. The Mikdash has a floor, which already tells you it is not movable. It is it represents permanence. But even Yisrim Amam, Yarkedei Abayit, B'tzalot Arazim, Nakarkad, Arakirod, even Lo Mibayit, Vir LeKodesh Kadashim. So then you have 20 cubits from the rear. He built a partition of cedar planks from the floor to the walls. He furnished an interior to serve as a shrine for the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Rabim Bamaya, Bayit Huay Chalifnei Hashem. No, sorry, Lifnai. So the Heichal is 40 Amot. The Erez El Abayit Penima, Mikal Pikayim, B'turei Tzitzim, Akol Erez, Ein Evan Niran. The cedar of the interior had carvings and of gourds and I don't know what a calyx is. Exactly. It was all cedar. No stone was exposed, right? Which is, you know, what we do with our houses, right? You don't see the inner whatever is inside, whether it be concrete or it's just, you know, or whatever. What's it called? Particle wood and things like that. You see just the hard wood with paintings and things like that. Udvir b'toch habayit mipnima neichin l'zein shamed aron brit Adonai. And then he, in the innermost part of the house, he puts a shrine where you're going to put the Aron, which that is definitely the same Aron, right? The Aron at least carries on. I think the other ones do also. I'm pretty sure it's just Shlomo adds to the other Kelim, but for sure the Aron is the same one, right? That's been a theme that ran through all of Sefer Shmuel, is that the Aron, or the whole conversation since the beginning was David said, how was the Aron Brit Hashem in a tent, I want to build a Beit HaMikdash. It's not, right, a new Aron, it's the Aron that has always been there, that has just been traveling with them.
But he needed to make new Kruvim, it seems like.
He makes new Kruvim, yes, he makes new Kruvim.
So
what
was the Kruvim?
You know, he makes much bigger Kruvim. You know, and it's, you know, it's, yeah, he makes bigger Kruvim. It sounds like the Kelim are the same, because when they're not the same, it emphasizes it, but I have to look back at Divrei HaYamim.
Yeah, because
but the Kruvim, definitely.
The story is that David did bring back the Aron from the Plishtim.
Correct, right. There's the whole story. I mean, the Aron is clearly the same Aron because that's all of Shmuel.
The Kruvim, it doesn't fit.
Well, he adds, right? Because now he is building a new Kodesh Kadoshim, and he puts Kruvim that are actually.
Who told him to do this?
Right. This is himself, right? This is, you know, the big question, right? It's, you know, it's not, there aren't specific instructions for it. I mean, so he, maybe it's divinely inspired or whatever it is exactly, but it's not.
But he did what he wanted to do?
It's
kind of a clear rules. This says,
correct, this is not. Now, right, was there Nevuah, was there not? You know, or it does, you know, we don't hear about an explicit Nevuah. You know, we don't hear about an explicit Nevuah. In Malachim. So he builds this intense, beautiful structure. You know, a lot of it sounds, you know, I mean, it's clear that not all of it is from, you know, is obligatory, you know, for like we saw before, that he didn't use metal for the stones of the Beit HaMikdash. That's not the mitzvah. The mitzvah is just on his Be'ach. He went above and beyond. He's doing, you know, he's trying to make it beautiful. And then
I'm really confused because he builds the kelim on his own, and then.
So I think the kelim not, but it sounds like the kelim. I think the kelim are from.
He did because he built new sets.
Of no, for the kruvim for sure. The kruvim are new, but the rest of them I'm not sure. He builds.
Sorry, in
I have to look at Divrei Yamim. At Divrei Yamim, he builds other minorot, but I'm not. It doesn't. I don't remember he replaced it.
God, so how can all the avodot, if it's not exactly sprinkled to the corner of this or the corner of that, it's pasul? If it's not
what God... Wait, well, the Kelim... I have to look at this. Divrei Yamim tells the story in... Divrei Yamim... Right. Here we go. Right, so paragimol and rayamim. Yeah, so it's the double, right, the lengths are double, right? It's 120 tall instead of 60.
What?
In derayamim. I'm just looking at derayamim, so the size of it is, No, there it's explicit that he remakes at least some of the right in the beginning of Perek Dal in Derayamim Vayas Mizbeach Nechoshet Esra Mamarako Shema Marachbo Esra Mar Kamatora. He makes a new Mizbeach Hazahav, though right 20 by 20 by 10, and then he makes a whole bunch of other things. He makes everything new. It sounds because he makes 10 kiors. And he makes 10 shulchanot, and he makes 10 minorot, and he makes the new mizrakim. Yeah, so the kelim he does. It sounds like except for the aron.
We're not as little as we were when we were traveling.
The only thing that really it sounds like there aren't, right? He just does it. The only thing that carries over is the aron. Right? The aron is always the aron. Right? There's only ever one aron. That's like the thrust of Shmuel, right? That's like the big drama in the background is what is going to happen to the Aron.
Yeah, but that was not the same as what does in the Mishkan. Who decides what is kosher and what is pasul or what needs to be done?
The Avodah aren't exactly the same, right? And that's a big discussion. The Gemaras go through great length because the Avodah change in a Mishkan, in a Bama Gdola, Bama Ktana, Bizman Sheyesh Beit HaMikdash, Ein Beit HaMikdash, all types of things. And that's, the Gemara does great energy to figure out what exactly were the differences, what are the implications of that, what was true between the Mishkan, right? Because, there's not just the Mishkan, there's also the period when there was no Mishkan and everything was on Bamot. Just the independent ones and then the public ones, so Shlomo is going in this, again, the only thing he seems not to build is the Aron. And again, here, it's interesting you don't hear about all the other Kalim that he built in Malachim, but in Divrei Yamim, you get, all of them, the ten of everything.
So who wrote this again? Forgive me, Malachim?
So Malachim is written by, oh God, according to the Gemara, it's written by, I think it's Chizkiyahu.
So this has also had to be done by Nebuah. Because otherwise he would not have known what God told Shlomo.
Well, that he could just... If he's writing post-facto,
How would he know what God told Shlomo?
Well, God didn't... I mean...
It was in a dream, probably, too.
Well, that's never a problem. In Navi, you always
I'm
get...
I'm just saying, the only... Navi that it was not talking in a dream is Moshe pale peata verbo.
Right, but you still always hear what people do in Yirmiyahu. According to the Gemara, it's written by Yirmiyahu, right? Because
he was a Navi, so he knew.
Right, well, because Malachim ends with the Chorban, with the Chorban, and Yirmiyahu is the Navi of the Chorban. So Dirayamim is, I think it's the what is the Sanhedrin, the Anshe Knesset Hagdolah, but it is Chizkiyah. Wait a second. I'll check. To make sure I get this right.
Did you read them on Bazak's book?
I have only glanced at it. You read it. You got it. You did. It's good, right? I've read parts of it.
He wanted that book. He couldn't get it for Shoshana, but he got it off.
Are you recording?
I can pause if you want. But it's good. I know he has a lot of controversial stuff in there. I know.
That's what I'm saying.
We know that.
Around for you.
What? No, I know he has controversial stuff. Everyone knows that. That's one of those things that everybody knows that he.
He's really good.
He is very good. I've read parts of it. For our Tanakh in a day. So I'm giving Kamuvan both Divrei Malachim and Divrei Amim.
So this may explain why it's not exactly the same, because different?
Well, so one of the big questions of Divrei Hayamim, and that's meaning on Tanakh and Adei Melachim, I'm going to talk about the themes of Melachim. Divrei Hayamim, I'm going to talk about why is it that when you retell the stories of Melachim, it doesn't look very much like the stories that you heard the first time. And that's that is the big question in Divrei Hayamim, which is why are things so radically different from what they were.
And actually telling the same story.
Yeah. But sometimes you get like huge additions and sometimes you get huge things that don't show up. Like very important things. Like just don't show up in Divrei Hayamim or don't show up in Melachim. People don't like learning Divrei Hayamim because for one of two reasons, right? Either they start and they realize the first 9 prakim are just names and they get bored and they never move on. Or if they've learned Melachim, so then they just feel like they're repeating it. But the drama, so to speak, in Divrei Hayamim is trying to figure out why, like what was going on.
Maybe we should read it parallel.
So that's what people do, actually. There's a book, I have it home, I can bring it, next time, which all it did was it took Melachim and Divrei Hayamim and some of the other books that sometimes do the same. Yeshayahu does the same thing also sometimes, not at this point in the book, but later on, once you are actually in the time period of Yeshayahu, and just puts them next to each other. So you just see it. It's called like Mikraot, Makbilot or something. Like it's not a, it was just someone who copied and,
But Yirmiyahu was not around at this time.
Now, this is way too early, right? Here's the Gemara in Baba Basra, right? Who wrote the Sefer Matanach? So Moshe Katav Sefro, Uparshat Bilam V'Iyov, right? So first position, Moshe writes the Torah, and Parshas Balak, which is unclear why that becomes separate, but that's a story for another time, and Iyov, Yeshua Katav Sefro, so Yeshua writes Yeshua, Shmona Pesachim Shabbat Torah, and then possibly the last 8 Pesachim of the Torah.
Yeah, we figured out there's more than 8 Pesachim, but okay.
Right, so the Ibn Ezra has 12, and then another 4, and then Yehuda HaChassid has Al Yashir, and Shmuel Katav Sefro, so Shmuel writes Shmuel, Ushoftim Virus, David.
Shmuel wrote Shoftim?
Right, well, that we know, like, that makes sense. He's the end of the period, right after the period, and he's writing that. And Rus happens at the same time. David katav sefer tilim, alidei asar zkenim, alidei adam reishon, makitzadak, da-da-da-da-da-da.
Sefer tilim, I think the 2 first prokim were shown to be written by David, but then...
Well, so that is 10 authors, right, according to the... And Asaf, and Asaf, Malkitzedek, Avram, Adam, Moshe, Haman, Yedutun.
It's all
10. Shlosh Korach, Yirmiyah, Katav Sifro, Sifro Melachim, the keynote, right, so he writes Eicha, Chizkiyahu, Siato Katvu Yishaya, Mishle, Shir Shirim, Kohelet, Anshe Knesset Gdola, yeah, I got that right, okay, that one, did right. Daniel, Miguel, Esther. So it's Ezra who's like the end of that. Katav Sifro, Ezra writes Ezra Nehemiah, the Yachas Shel Divrei Hayamim Adlo, and he writes the genealogies in Divrei Hayamim until himself. And then it's finished by Nehemiah ben Chachalia. So Ezra Nehemiah.
Very interesting that Shmuel that he didn't write it himself. David wrote.
Shlomo did write it himself. You mean Shlomo?
Yeah, but so the thing is, Melachim is one of the longest books in Tanakh. We're doing like for the Tanakh in a day, just as sort of advertising. We're doing like mini videos.
Yeah. Well, when is it?
December 24th.
So
Melachim is one of the longest books in Tanakh. Meaning, I told Meyer, trivia question.
He should have written it himself, but he did.
Well, only the first few prakim, right? This goes from Shlomo till Churban HaBayit. It is...
At least his body could have written.
Yeah, well, when the Gemara says that someone wrote it, does it mean he wrote it or like he was the compiler? Like there were documents extant from all the kings, but someone at the end has to put it all together.
This is just the sense.
Right, well, that Katav might not be Katav, it might be they were the editor, right? Edited by...
Previous document and somebody just summarized what he found in previous document.
Well, because, it's not clear Katav means Katav, it means...
Right. But you don't know what source he used to write.
Right, whatever. Meaning, but Shlomo obviously isn't writing about the Churban HaBayit, You know,
no, but he could have written this
one. He could have written, or some record, or his scribe, or someone could have written some record, and then Yirmiyahu, or, you know, whatever, the end of the period is putting everything together from hundreds of years, you know.
Right.
Like, Divrei Yamim is the book that covers the most time in all of Torah. Like, Divrei Yamim is the longest book, chronologically, of any book in Torah. Hands down.
But Divrei Yamim is a summary of everything.
Well, that's yeah. Well, that's why Divrei Yamim, because Divrei Yamim starts at Adam and it goes to Chovra Nabayit. It's
well,
like,
but they just use the sources yeah. that already were available.
Yeah. Well, Divrei Yamim is as people say, a clearly a historiographical work. Right. It's a reflection on history. Right. Meaning, it's telling the same stories from a different angle. It's historiographical in that sense, but it's telling the history of the world. From the beginning to Churban HaBayit, then Bereishis is the second longest Sefer, and then Melachim after those two, you know, and that's really unfair because they have like all the generations.
They have Nevuah.
What?
And Shei Knesset
Abdullah. They have like Ruach HaKodesh, right? Ezra and Nehemiah are post Nevuah already. You know, they're like already Daniel. You know, these are like Hanani, Mishael, Azari. All those people are like, you know, weirdly Nevuah or, you know, in divinely inspired type things.
Not the same level as Yirmiyahu.
No, as they go on, things get more... And saying, as you get to Ksuvim, even when Daniel has Nevuah, it's so impossible to understand. You know, even the end of, say, of Nevi'im and Treyasar, you know, Zechariah is the Navi already, where every time he has Nevuah, he asks the angels, what is going on? I don't even know what I'm looking at. And they say, don't you understand? He says, no, I don't know what I say. Like, I have no idea what I'm looking at. Right? I have these visions, and they're impenetrable. You know, and Daniel, no one understands what Daniel is talking about. That's why all the Messianic Nevuah are all there, but everyone tries to figure out, well, what did he mean? When is Mashiach? Good luck trying to figure out anything in Daniel. So Ezra and Nehemiah post that already. They're even later.
Maybe they were just confused.
Yeah, well, I mean, Zechariah is the weird thing. He's totally confused.
I had a Nevuah and I'm not sure what I thought. They will put him into.
Well, there's Zechariah says to the angels constantly. He's like, forward. Yeah, but Zechariah, he's like, I don't know. It's very strange because Zechariah, he got, you know, is Nevuah after Nevuah that he doesn't understand. And then finally he gets one Nevuah that he does understand, which is like a rock with 12 eyes. And like, he's like, oh yeah, I know exactly what that means. And you're like, how did that? You figured out everything else. You have no idea what's going on. But it's a very strange book. I remember I went to one of the Shirim of the Imeim in Tanakh, which was like, to understand Zechariah, I'm like, if you can explain Zechariah to me, then it's an impossible book. But okay, but anyway, so here, so Shlomo... So Shlomo, right, so he's rebuilding everything except for the Aron, at least the way Divrei Yamim tells it. He covers everything in gold. He overlays everything in gold. He covers everything with gold. And then he makes these new kruvim, right, which are huge, right? Ayas bedvishni kruvim atzei shaman asu esra amot kamata, right? That's, you know, ten amot, you know, stature. That's already big.
6 meters.
Yeah, it's big. Yeah, that's, you know, that's big. The chamesh amot kenaf akruv, the wings are 5 amot, right? Achar chamesh amot kenaf akruv hasheni, esra amot miktzot kenafad vaktzot kenafad, right? So it's whatever it is, in, you know, 10 amot in width as well. Esra bama akruv hasheni, midah achar veketzav achar l'shnei akruvim, they were both the same size. Kumar akruv achar, esra bama v'chen akruv hasheni, v'yitin et akruvim v'toch habayit apnimi, v'yishtu et kanfei akruvim, v'tigah kenaf achar bikiru kenaf akruv hasheni, v'gad bikir hasheni. And they're touching each other, and it's not totally clear are they facing each right here. They're right. They seem to be facing. You know.
Doesn't say.
Yeah. So you know, Chazal have their old thing that sometimes they face inwards, sometimes they face outwards. You know, here it sounds like they're outwards, right? Because their wings are to each other. Right, you know, your wings are behind. Their wings are behind. So, like, you know, so it sounds like they're, you know, that their wings are touching. So they're, you know, so they're facing back. So that's one. So one suggestion I saw is that in the Mishkan, you know, Michazal say that, you know, when the Jews got along, they faced each other. When they didn't face along, they faced out. But so one suggestion I saw was that maybe there's a difference, right? Because the Mishkan, they faced primarily inwards. In the Beit HaMikdash, at least the way it's described here, they're facing outwards, which again is symbolic of the Beit HaMikdash, with, you know, with the windows facing out. There's this outward sort of ethos of the Mikdash. And he covers those in gold. Right, to all the walls of the house, the inner areas, the outer area. He carved kruvim everywhere, in palms and calyxes. And then he covers the floor with gold. And for the entrance, he makes olive wood doors, or shtei daltot atzei shemen, mekala lehen mekalot kruvim, v'tamrod v'tirei tzitzim, so as ha'ave yirel al kruvim, v'tamrod al azav, again, he has these engravings on it, and they're covered in gold, v'chein asal petach haichal mazot atzei shemen made and revit, and he does it for the entrance to the heichal, shtei daltot atzei rushim, shnei tzalim, v'delet achad glilim, shnei klaim, v'delet shnei glilim, v'kela kruvim, v'tirod p'tirei tzitzim, v'tibaz av yishar al mechukah, again, covered with gold, and, you know, evenly. No, this is ostentatious. This is, you know, big, permanent. It's meant to be grand. It's meant to be permanent. It's meant to have, right? And, you know, you see later on when the Jews are suffering and Chizkiyahu needs to send money to Sennacherib, he takes off all the gold. Not this gold, because they recovered it gold, but he covers it in gold and he takes it off again, right? You can have it without. It survives without. But even a chaser b'nivit shloshat turei gizit b'tor krotot harazim. In the last two pesukim, we saw already that he finishes it in. He started it again in the fourth year in Ziv, and he finishes it in his 11th year. And again, that was right. So it's v'shana revit yusad b'beit Adonai b'yerach Ziv v'shana echad asrei b'yerach Bul u'chodesh hashmini kela b'beit l'chol dvarav l'chol mishpatav v'nei v'sheva shanim. Right, it took 7 years to build. And then we move to his throne. So that's, you know, this is his crowning achievement, but we're actually going to come back to it, like I said, after the building of his palace, which is the next thing we hear about.
Again, I want to know who gave the guidelines on building the Beit HaMikdash, and who defined the rules on how to serve God in Beit HaMikdash?
So, that, you know, the Karbanot are still from the Torah. I mean, those are still outlined in the Torah, right? No, the Tamid and the...
It's not the same structure. The Mizbeach is not the same.
No, but still, it never says, like, a meter. It says Al-Karnot HaMizbeach. It says Yesod. It's, I mean, all those things are... Right, those are still, right? You still have Yesod. You still have Karnot. You still have whatever. You know, it's size and number and things like that that are changing.
Those are specific,
but...
The rules were specific to the Mishkan.
Right, so that seems like, well, you know, that seems to be not the case. Right, the Karbanot seem to be just the rules for the Mikdash in general. But the, you know, and certain things there, it's not about size, about shape, right? And, you know, certain basics they seem to still have had, though, as we, you know, as you see in Divrei Hayamim, he does change a lot. I mean, yeah, the Mishkan doesn't have 10 menorot. As one, you know, he has menorah after menorah and shulchan after shulchan.
So, did one coin have to light them? So that's or 10 coins.
Right, so that's what the Gemara tries to figure out, what exactly is with all these menorah and what exactly you do with all of them. And then he has, you know, the Yam Shel Shlomo, which is a whole, you know, all types of things going on there. It's a very grand structure with a lot more than the.
The more you know, the more questions. Really, for me, it's the more you know, the more questions.
Yes, and now you've read Rav Bazak's book, so everything is.
I'm completely confused.
He's also a great writer. He's just he's a clear, clear writer.
It's so just it's really, really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. You finished it. You got
No. I don't have much time to read, but it's my sharpest reading now during the week. Sometimes
it's long. It's like
yeah.
It's